Amazon, the e-commerce giant that's disrupting many industries, looks like it's in position to also upend the stock market hierarchy. While it's still about $140 billion in market cap behind the reigning champion, Apple, Amazon could beat out the maker of the iPhone in the race toward a market milestone, a $1 trillion valuation. Amazon rose past Microsoft in February and is now the third most valuable company by market cap behind first place Apple and runner-up Google.
It's the first major European auto gathering of the year, and the Geneva Motor Show is a sea of hotly anticipated new cars. But while the number of auto models is on the rise, another type is in decline, now opting for product experts instead, both male and female. Some think the industry hasn't gone far enough. Formula One recently dropped its grid girls completely. But the car industry is clearly having to look in the mirror, with bosses admitting the percentage of women in executive positions needs to increase.
North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said he is committed to denuclearization. Kim pledged that North Korea will refrain from any further nuclear or missile tests. And he expressed his eagerness to meet President Trump as soon as possible. President Trump appreciated the briefing and said he would meet Kim Jong-un by May to achieve permanent denuclearization.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Friday. It's March 9th, 2018, 5:10 in the morning. We're glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day. We have a good show for you this morning. It's Jobs Report Friday. Paul Nolte is in the house this morning, and we're going to talk about jobs and the economy coming up with Paul. And a little bit later in the program, did you know American Airlines, if you fly American Airlines, they're tracking you when you're not actually flying American Airlines to make sure that, well, they want to find out why and also try to get you back. We'll talk with Brian Summers later in the program from Skift. Surprising report from Brian a little bit later on. But first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up about 32 points this morning. NASDAQ and S&P futures are up just single digits. Markets seem to be moving very slowly in no direction this morning, hovering right around where they've been all night as the investors wait for the jobs report. Around the rest of the globe, markets are mixed in Europe with the FTSE a little bit higher. The DAX is lower and the CAC is higher. And in Asia, markets are generally higher this morning with the Nikkei up about 0.5%. Oil is trading at $60.59 a barrel. A couple of stories we're watching for you. Despite reservations by members of his party, President Trump has pushed ahead with new tariffs on steel and aluminum imports to the U.S. The tariffs take effect in 15 days, with America's neighbors indefinitely spared. That's Canada and Mexico. Reaction still coming in yesterday. A number of organizations issued statements on this. The National Retail Federation says it's extremely concerned by the administration's apparent desire, in their words, to ignite a trade war where the net losers will be the very people the president wants to help. And the Business Roundtable says that the tariffs are a major unforced error by President Trump, putting America's economic progress at risk. It represents companies with more than 16 million employees, more than $7 trillion in annual revenues. And there's word from the United States Senate. Senator Bob Corker has introduced a bill to roll back the tariffs. We'll see if Congress acts at all on the president's moves this week. That's front and center this morning. Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago is with us. He's an SVP and portfolio manager there, and he sort of manages our imaginary portfolios as well. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve.
So what do you think about this trade thing?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and a lot of the discussion has been around the relative size of the U.S. steel and aluminum industries. And a lot of what has happened over the last two decades to aluminum steel, you know, a lot of it has been attributed to job losses and things moving overseas. But when you take a look at a lot of the companies that are here and producing steel in the United States, They have benefited from technology just like every other business. So it used to be that you would take 100 employees to produce X amount of steel. They're now able to produce that same amount of steel with 10 people as opposed to 100. So there's a lot more efficiencies in production now than there were 30, 40 years ago. Yes, some of it has moved offshore, but there is still a lot of efficiency that's in the industry. And then we have to take a look at the users, and that's really the bulk of it. The users of steel are much bigger than the steel and aluminum industries, and yes, those potentially could be hurt by the new legislation.
And so here we are on Jobs Report Friday. How significant? We heard those two organizations talking about the potential loss for jobs. How significant is that threat?
You know, it's going to be a wait and see. It's going to be hard to pin it, and it's going to take a while for the tariffs to work their way into the system and actually start to affect jobs. So we've got 15 days before they get implemented. If companies are really willing to cut jobs and change their business models, it's going to take a while to work its way into the economy. So we should have a better idea probably in about 6 months or so. So it's not anything that's going to happen tomorrow, but it'll take a little bit of a while before we start to see them show up in the numbers.
We should say that tariffs are taxes. That's one of the same, aren't they? People just call them tariffs. And so people like you and me, when we go and pull a can of beer out of the refrigerator, we could eventually be paying a little bit more for this tariff.
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, it now becomes part of the input cost of production. And where that may have some impact, actually, again, when we look at the trade deficit that the U.S. had, and those numbers were released earlier this week, and our trade deficit is now larger than it's been since 2008. We are importing a lot more than we are exporting. We've had a weaker dollar over the last 2 years, and we're just, and that should help the export market. We're just not seeing it yet. So there are some issues with trade. But when you take a look at it, it's still of a benefit to a lot of the consumers. I mean, we are interested in buying cheap goods, and a way to do it is look to somebody else to produce it if they can produce it cheaper than we can.
Jobs Report Friday, what are the estimates for later this morning?
The estimates are for around 200,000 non-farm payroll. The jobless rate might tick down a little bit from 4.1 to 4, but the key number that everybody's going to be looking at is wage growth, and that's estimated to be a 0.2 increase for the month, maybe as high as 0.3, which is what we saw last month, and that's what got everybody all excited. I think one of the keys here is going to be the revisions to the last couple months. So everybody's going to be looking at this number very, very closely, because the last month's jobs numbers was what kicked off all the volatility to the market. So this one gets a little bit closer look because of that.
And this morning, as we watch the futures, I know it's hard to predict what's going to happen in about 3.5 hours, but they really, especially like the Dow and the Nasdaq, haven't been moving at all overnight.
No, and it's kind of surprising too. It's been a very good week for the markets, and the markets have been moving up and down based on what was going to happen with tariffs, and now we've got that put behind us, and now we're going to be focusing in on jobs. And I don't anticipate much movement up until that report comes out. Nobody wants to get too far ahead of it and make a bet one way or the other.
Is the Dow now negative for the year?
The Dow is unchanged to slightly up for the year. I got to take a look because the Dow and the S&P over the last couple of weeks have moved in dramatically different ways, because the Dow is a lot more industrial related. So the tariffs have hit those types of companies like Boeing, which are big weights in the Dow, more than the S&P, where their big weights tend to be Apple, Amazon, and Exxon. So they're about unchanged to maybe slightly up for the year so far.
Okay, Paul, hang on. We're going to continue with Paul Nolte here on our Friday edition of the Opening Bell Jobs Report Friday. We'll talk more about that coming up with Paul.
You're listening to the Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It's 522 now. We're here with Paul Nolte of Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. We're talking about the jobs report. Paul, you mentioned the wage part of this. According to my notes, 2.9% was the number in January, is where we are year over year.
Mm-hmm.
So you're with the potential added this morning to be over 3%.
We could be right about 3%, and that's kind of the magic number that the Fed has been looking at as one of the things that they want to see. They want to see the wage growth up. They want to see inflation up to 2%, and we're essentially at full employment. So, if we look back historically and we look at what happens to wage growth, we're now in the middle part of the range from roughly 2 to 4%. We got down to essentially zero coming out of the Great Recession in 2009 to 2012, where wages really weren't growing at all. So it feels like we're really growing at great guns, or wage growth is very, very high. But from a historical perspective, we're really only in the middle part of the range. So while the Fed is correct to start to be concerned about it, we're not to the area that we used to see in the 80s, where wages were growing very, very rapidly, but then so was inflation.
I heard someone yesterday say that they were worried, seeing the data, that the job market could overheat. What does that mean?
What that means is we've got jobs that are begging right now. We're looking for people. We want to hire. We have a lot of capacity to bring people on. And those that are here are busy looking elsewhere. And I could be losing employees. So in order to keep them, I have to pay them higher wages. Or to attract them, I'm going to pay higher wages. And that higher wages then goes into the pricing for goods and services. It also reduces the margins of corporations and hits their bottom line and impacts their bottom line. So they're not making as much money because it's getting paid out now. So the fear is that becomes self-fulfilling, that we now have higher wages, which means I have to raise my prices to cover those wages. And we get into that spiral that we saw in the 70s and 80s. Where prices were going up. Why? Because I have to pay my people more. Why do I have to pay my people more? Because prices are going up. And it becomes that circle, not virtuous circle.
Yeah. The tax cuts that these companies got put them in pretty decent shape. Didn't the cuts help to maybe offset that a little bit? Or?
Oh, it did. But if you take a look at a lot of the studies have come out immediately after that in surveys on talking to corporations and what they were going to be doing with those tax cuts, 60 to 70% of those tax cuts were going back to stock buybacks. Very little of it was getting put back into operations, new plant equipment, employees, et cetera. So a lot of that money was getting funneled toward the shareholders in the form of stock buybacks.
The other big story this week was the resignation of Gary Cohn from the economic advisors. He's the chief White House economic advisor. What does this do to the view of economists as they look at what policy is coming out of the White House?
You know, it's kind of interesting. The whole idea of the National Economic Council was created with the Bill Clinton presidency. So it's a relatively new creation. And what you have, a group of economists that are together, accounts or advisors that get together and provide some guidance to the president. And Cohn is the leader of that group. It's not as though his voice is stronger or weaker than anybody else's. He is just in charge of that organization, that committee, if you will. They're still on that committee. A fairly diverse group of people that are advising the president, but it's up to the president to decide which voice carries more weight. And it isn't always necessarily, or wasn't always necessarily, Gary Cohn, but because of his background and his experience with the financial markets, Wall Street, et cetera, and being the chairman of that committee, it was thought that his voice carried a lot more weight. It is in opposition to what Trump believes and what his direction for what he wanted to do with the economy and some of the programs he wanted to implement. But that argumentation was always going on and doesn't necessarily stop. I don't know if it's necessarily important that he is gone or not. We saw it in the market. We reacted very quickly. It was down 400 points, and we wound up finishing unchanged and following on, actually recovered from that. longer term, what we've seen with this president so far is he's going to do what he wants to do. He'll take some counsel, but he's certainly willing to forge his own direction.
As we head to the jobs report, is there anything we should be doing? Should we just sit tight and watch it happen, or
allow it to unfold? What normally is going to happen with the jobs report is you're going to get a knee-jerk reaction as soon as the report gets released. And we saw that certainly last month. And it's not a bad thing to sit back and just allow the dust to settle. So maybe midday, take a look and see what's going on with the markets and make some maybe a little adjustment here and there. But when you take a look at stocks versus bonds at this point, really, so far this year, they're pretty much in a dead heat as far as performance goes. So your bond portfolio is doing about as well as your stock portfolio. So a good balanced portfolio shouldn't be a bit in pretty good shape right here.
We'll have some flash reaction to this as well. Paul is going to come back a little bit later on this morning. And around 10 o'clock, I'd say, you and me will be on a podcast, After the Bell podcast, with some instant reaction and analysis to the jobs report.
So I'll have most of my numbers all put together, and we can do some a little more analysis.
Very good. Paul will be back again later this morning. You can find that at WGNradio.com. And Paul, have a great weekend otherwise.
Thank you. You too.
All right, Paul Nolte from Kingsview Asset Management in Chicago. Kingsview.com is where you can go learn more about Paul and his colleagues over at Kingsview.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago startup Interior Define just raised $15 million for its e-commerce furniture company. The startup allows customers to browse and purchase made-to-order furniture by customizing everything from size to cushion type to leg style. It'll use the money to open additional brick-and-mortar stores and improve its tech. Kraft Heinz is launching a new startup accelerator and incubator called Springboard, which will help the Chicago and Pittsburgh-based food giant connect with emerging early-stage food startups. And Block Club Chicago, a new media startup from former DNA Info editors, just made Kickstarter history. The group's crowdfunding campaign is now the most funded local journalism project ever on Kickstarter in the U.S., raising more than $183,000. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Friday edition of The Opening Bell. United Airlines has put the brakes on a plan to replace monthly bonuses with a lottery system that would have offered large rewards to a few workers at random. The move comes after a backlash from United employees. Brian Summers is a business airline reporter for Skift, and joins us now via Skype for our regular Friday conversation. Brian, what's going on at United? Why have they decided to pull back on this?
Yeah, you know, last week United made this internal announcement, and they said, you know, we had been giving bonuses to frontline employees for a while, things like $25 or $50, depending on what it was. If the airline had a good operational quarter, so if flights left and arrived on time and things like that. You know, in the aggregate, when you have as many employees as United has, even though your individual employee might take home $900 a year or whatever, it adds up. So last week, United came out with this brand new idea. They were super excited, and instead of just automatically giving employees cash because the airline had a good operational quarter, they were going to start having raffles and prizes, and, you know, an employee could earn $100,000, you could earn a car, you could earn a vacation package, and it was sort of this rah-rah-rah, won't this be great? And, you know, I'm looking at this right now, and it says that we could build a sense of excitement and accomplishment with, quote, more bang for our buck. So even though they didn't quite come out and say it, like, even giving out all these prizes, United was probably going to come out financially ahead.
And so the employees that got wind of this and started learning about it, they were furious, and they even went as far as putting together a petition.
Yeah, it was sort of interesting. I guess employees have more say than people think. you know, the employees had come to rely on these bonuses. The airline is doing pretty well. Nobody likes things to be taken away. The story went viral in the media. And just earlier this week, United came out and said, you know, we're going to hit the pause button on this. We're going to look at it. They didn't quite say the program would be canceled, but it just seems hard to believe that the raffle will go on as planned.
What do you think this says about United Airlines President Scott Kirby?
Well, we've talked about Scott before, and I have to tell you, Scott has a great reputation in the airline business. A lot of folks do think that he's going to come out and be the savior of the airline. He knows how to run a profitable airline. I don't know exactly how this goes, but my guess is that the president of an airline as large as United, even if he signs the letter to employees, probably isn't spending a lot of his time thinking about a program like this. So, yes, his name is on it, but I doubt he was working on the scheme for months and months and months. I doubt it's his top priority.
Let's talk about a story that you've been writing about. American Airlines knows where you've been flying if it's not with them, don't they?
Yeah, you know, I went down to Dallas-Fort Worth a few weeks ago, and I interviewed the vice president of the American Advantage program, which is their loyalty program, and I learned a lot about how it works, and of course, they have a lot of data on their customers. They know where their customers fly and when and how much they've spent and, you know, what sort of people they are, and The vice president joked that airlines, even when they didn't make money, they were always rich in data. Now we're getting to the point where you have the computing power to say, okay, well, how can we use that data to give us a more full picture of our customers? And in this thing that you're describing, American basically says, okay, well, we have these high-value customers, and we don't want to lose them. So let's look at this proactively and see, okay, well, who might be most likely to leave us? Is this person only flown 10 times this year, and we think they're going to fly 30? You know, what's going wrong? Did we lose their bag? What have we done? And so instead of waiting until that customer maybe in Chicago leaves American for United, American looks at the data and says, this customer is at risk. And what they do is sort of amazing. In 2018, they actually pick up the phone and they call the customer. And, you know, this is not a big surprise, but the customer is usually pleased about it. The customer gets to get off their chest whatever had been concerning them about American, and maybe the customer doesn't defect to United at the end of the day.
You know, and that's sort of, it seems very strange. I don't know if I would even believe that it was American on the other end. That's how strange it would be to get one of those calls.
Absolutely. You know, most of us are used to form emails and things like that, but there's a lot of people out there that buy very expensive plane tickets, often on a corporate expense account. These customers are very important to an airline like American, and they do not want to lose the customer. It's much different than losing a customer who spends, you know, $200 a year going home for Thanksgiving. Yes, American wants to hold on to that customer, but it is not the end of the day if they go to Southwest.
And so are those the people that the airline that in your interview, they called splitters?
So splitters are a little bit different. So American would prefer somebody to fly American maybe 95% of the time. So if American has a flight to where the person is going, they are going to fly American no matter what. But in a market like Chicago, you can have what you describe as splitters, which are basically people, because American and United both fly almost everywhere anyone wants to go, instead of concentrating just on one airline, they fly American about 50% of the time and United about 50% of the time. And, you know, airlines are doing all they can to turn those splitters into somebody that's loyal to one airline or the other. And the loyalty program vice president was telling me, you know, we can crunch the data, and if somebody is only flying with us 20 times a year, but we think they're probably flying 40 times a year total, we have a pretty good idea that they're splitting on us, that they're with another airline. Not sure all the time which airline, but American's going to go out there and try to get the rest of that customer's business.
Very interesting. Another interesting story you've been writing about is this about what SkyTeam is doing. Tell us about SkyTeam and why we might be hearing more of it.
Yeah, SkyTeam is one of the big three international airline alliances, along with Star Alliance and Oneworld, which are both stronger in Chicago. First, let me say that these three alliances don't work in quite the same way as a lot of customers think. A lot of times, the airlines in the alliances, and there can be 20 or 25 or 30, are actually fierce competitors, and they don't get along that well. And in a lot of countries, they're actually forced by law to compete. So customers think if I fly one SkyTeam airline, then I'm going to be treated exactly the same as if I fly another. But that's generally not true. These are loose marketing alliances. And sometimes one SkyTeam airline will not help somebody who's flying another SkyTeam airline. And SkyTeam has understood this. And basically what they said is, like, we know that not all of the airlines in this alliance always help each other, but we're going to build a new computer program that allows agents at any SkyTeam airline to help customers at another airline. So if you usually fly Delta and you happen to be in Russia, then Aeroflot people can help you with a Delta itinerary because they're both members of SkyTeam. It's a great idea. Whether it works in practice, we'll have to see, because as you would imagine, airline employees usually like to help people who are actually flying that airline that day and maybe don't want to help another airline's customers.
Now, from a customer standpoint, though, I mean, imagine if you're one part of your leg of the flight is delayed. And I mean, I know you use the example of a 2-hour delay from Paris to China and then from China somewhere else, I mean, on two different airlines. Imagine that you could get that solved in one place if there was a problem.
Yeah, it would be great. It's just harder to do than you would think, but at least now all the SkyTeam airlines have an interface that would allow them to do it if they want to do it.
And how will they judge whether or not this is successful or not? Is it just going to be a customer response?
Well, they're not going to tell us, Steve, right? That's one of the fun things about journalism. They're always going to tell us it's going very, very well, whether it is or not. But anecdotally, the SkyTeam people have given some examples, and they say, you know, it's working a lot better because if somebody buys a ticket on Delta, but they're stuck in Europe and they're flying two European airlines, historically they've actually had to pick up the phone and call Delta in the United States, no matter what time of the day it is in the United States, because Delta sold them the ticket. Doesn't matter that they're flying KLM or Air France that day. And so the idea that they could now go to the Air France or KLM ticket counter in Europe and not have to call the United States is kind of a big deal, and it is impressive.
Very cool. Brian, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next week.
Thank you, Steve.
Brian Summers is an airline business reporter for Skift via Skype with us this morning. Make sure you follow Skift on Twitter, at Skift, and Brian as well, at Brian Summers, S-U-M-E-R-S. Make sure you sign up for the weekly Skift Airline Innovation Report as well, skift.com/airline.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Futures are flat. As we await the jobs report later this morning, Dow futures are just up 14 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are flat to up just a couple of points this morning. Now, agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
And good morning to you, Steve. If you want to buy some farmland in the next couple of months, it's being sold. We got another report from the Sterling Land Company in Illinois this week that gives us a pretty good understanding of what's happening to the price of farmland with the lower farm prices for commodities. And I noted a couple of sales that took place, 223 acres sold at public auction in Sangamon County. And that land sold at $12,181 an acre. 250 acres in a private transaction in Bureau County. Land sold for $10,900 an acre. Closed just a couple of weeks ago. 412 acres sold in a private transaction in Whiteside County. Closed on February 27th. Selling for $8,452 an acre. So despite the slow economy for agricultural commodities, Steve, we're looking at land prices holding pretty well.
Speaking of prices, corn prices have rallied this week after the latest USDA report on demand.
Indeed, because the supply-demand numbers that came out in the report on Thursday indicated we've got more corn than we were thinking we had, and that did push the corn price, the corn market higher. It hit a seven-month high and settled up 6.25 cents after the report came out earlier this week. But corn prices on a continuous chart notched their biggest daily gain since December. That also pulled wheat futures higher. Soybean futures were narrowly lower following the USDA data that also predicted larger than expected U.S. ending stocks for wheat and soybeans, due in part to reduced exports. But on the corn picture, export sales have spiked so far this year after dry and hot conditions took a toll on the crop in Argentina. That's the number three global corn and soybean exporters. Still keeping an eye on that weather in Argentina, however, because that continues to be dry. And it probably is going to have an impact on prices when we get into planting. Something happened this week that's kind of interesting. The Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, we were talking about that a year ago in the campaign. And the president-elect at that time, Donald Trump, said, no, not good. We're pulling out. So yesterday in Santiago, Chile, 11 nations signed the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, but not the United States.
Disappointing news, I'm sure, for the ag community.
Well, yes, because they were counting on the 13 countries on the Pacific Rim to come up with a trade agreement that would maybe smooth out some of the rough spots in trade, and it just didn't happen because that's one that President Trump indeed followed through on. One more note, the president apparently is taking the biofuels situation seriously because the White House has preliminary plans to host on Monday the latest in a string of meetings between rivals in the corn and oil industries. So we'll see where that one goes.
All right, Orion, have a great weekend.
You too.
All right, Orion Samuelson with us this morning. Make sure you listen to The Morning Show with Orion and Max Armstrong tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock right here on 720 WGN. Now, the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Friday, March 9th. Not a lot on the agenda today. The big story of the day will be the U.S. jobs report coming out. We expect about 200,000 jobs created for the last month. Wages likely to tick up anywhere from 0.2% to 0.3%. Jobs report at mid-morning today.